to the darkened sky in its rage. But the white bird just sits in her cage, unknown.
Welcome to the French Connections Thursday edition. Today's date is the 3rd of May, 2007. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Day after the big debates, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Sarkozy and Ségolène Royal had their battle royale, and no pun intended. And, of course, neither one of them did a knockout blow. However, she lost her temper during the debate and started really yelling and screaming a bit, and I think she lost as a result of it. But I wonder if she's just not the John Kerry of France, the fake opposition kind of thing, because here's what I see. She had several things she could have done that would place her apart from Sarkozy, that would have clearly put in the minds of the French electorate that this guy is dangerous. One of them was a comparison to her relationship with George Bush and Sarkozy's. Sarkozy has been warm and fuzzy with Bush, and she could have used that in the debate and did not. There were several other very important issues that she just completely left off the table that would have been real knockout blows to Sarkozy, and she didn't use them. And one of them was the spraying away of the Rakai, or the Banyuls children. And the Banyuls is an area, the suburbs of Paris or Lyon in the big cities, where much of the North African population lives. And this guy said he was going to spray the youth away over there with a high powered hose. And there were several things that could have really got, the negative flow against Sarkozy in this thing, and she just completely left those off the table. And I thought to myself, this has to be intentional, especially the one with Bush, especially the one that Sarkozy is buttered up with Israel. This guy has the support of all the Israeli high-end politicians, as well as, he's over there at the Wailing Wall rocking back and forth with a box on his head, too, and being a fanatic. And I don't, no disparagements to the Jewish community in that, maybe I should apologize. In fact, I don't care if people have faith in something, but, this guy acts anything but religious, acts anything but honest and kind to anyone. And so he's the least religious human being I could speak of here. And it looks like he's going to be the next president of this country. And where's that going to leave old Daryl Bradford Smith? It could leave me in some hot water, guys. He has a reputation for being brutal and take no prisoners kind of approach to living, and could end up putting me in the hoosegow for what they were going to consider hate crimes. And I don't hate anybody. I just hate the criminals. But the reason that this guy is getting away with this election process is, of course, because they control the press here in France, as they do in America, as they do in Britain, as they do in all of the Western cultures. All of the press is controlled, and they're not going to get called on any aggressive move against a member of the society. And what we end up having here is a society where the police and the administrative forces can act with impunity against the public. We've got an example of that in the United States, and I brought on my guest today to start maybe drumming up support from the listenership on how we can keep my friend and my partner in this information, Christopher Bolin, out of jail. And I've decided to ask Eric to come on with me, and the three of us are going to discuss drumming up support for this. So, Christopher, are you with me?
Yeah, I'm here.
And Eric, are you here?
Yes, I'm here too.
Sorry to go on, guys, with such a long little intro here, but I thought the people should know about what's happening over here in France. And I am truly worried about my own freedom here and how the French apparatchik will apply itself to my position here. But Chris, you're already way down the road here. We brought up this story many times on this programming and on the website. And today, your whole story about this, how you're fighting it, is on the top of the web page. So anybody coming to the site is going to see the information immediately. What I would like to do is find some support for, first of all, for getting the word out about what's happening to you, but also to get people to participate in calling these different government sponsored organizations like the courthouse, the police department, and also the press in the area, and start putting pressure on these people, letting them know that there are people around the world who are watching this story.
Yeah, I appreciate that, because you know, it's my case has not been presented to the local people in the local media in Chicago fairly, and I'm in a predicament now, because my case, you know, began last August 15th, and now I have a court date of May 31st. But I'm in a real predicament, because it's whether I'm going to fight this and go to the jury trial with all the added costs and stress of that entails, or whether I should just give in and take a plea bargain. You know, I have.
Well, what is the main consideration for staying the course with this?
Well, the main consideration is, of course, cost.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm going to go, it's when you go to trial, at a jury trial in Chicago, it's a battle. It's a battle, and in this battle, you have to have some strength. What's happened in my case is that the police have destroyed or deleted the evidence that would exonerate me and would prove my case. They have destroyed, deleted the video evidence that they made from their four vehicles that filmed the incident. They have these video cameras that record, you know, an arrest. And there were something like seven police cars around my house at the time. Four of them were recording this.
And all four have mysteriously deleted their information.
Well, the letter from the Hoffman Estates attorney to my lawyer says that the mobile videotapes were erased or recycled in the cause of regular business, which is a violation of their own general order. When they have videotape evidence that is used, that it should be used in a prosecution or has evidentiary value, they are obliged to maintain it.
Well, isn't that one of the first jobs of the police department, is to protect evidence so that either a prosecution or an exoneration can be affected?
Yeah.
I mean, because look, if the police department can't even have a chain of evidence controlled, then what are they there for?
Right. Well, that's a good point. You know, and by destroying that evidence, though, they the court didn't sanction them. The court didn't forbid them from bringing forth any other testimony or evidence that would have been covered by those videotapes. So the videotapes of the incident were destroyed. Then I finally got a hold of the police transmission, the 9/11 transmissions tape, but that should be about 40 minutes long, 35 minutes long, and it's now been cut down to 11 minutes. And most conspicuous is the 11 minutes prior to the police, this undercover team arriving at my house, is missing. There's nothing there. It's like the 10 missing minutes of the Watergate tapes. And then they're an undercover team. They admit that you know, in their press releases that they gave out, that this was an undercover team. And this undercover team came to my house wearing these navy blue vests and blue jeans. They didn't have anything that identified them as police, which is why my wife and I were asking these men who were marching up my driveway who they were and what they wanted. And this is the essence of it. But now what they've done is they've brought these photographs of vests that they say that these men were wearing, which have police written in big yellow letters across the front vest.
Well, now see here, your lawyer has to go right back and say, see, Your Honor, this would not be a point of contention if we had the videos, and so therefore we feel prejudiced here because we can't even prove the case of that Mr. Fabolin is making here, that those police were not clearly marked. And
right. Well,
I mean,
yeah,
you're going to go down the list of things that,
right,
when they bring in the eyewitness people that they've been coaching,
right,
there's going to be discrepancies, and you could refute that with the video. So
right.
I don't see how they can go forward with this whole thing without that. I mean, the video evidence is going to crush them.
Right. Well, that's what we would hope. And but you know, it's a tough battle to go to court. I you know, like my lawyer, he last week I said I would really like to know what the plea bargain would be. Because if I'm going to go to court, he wants to have a partner with him. He wants to have two lawyers there. So he wants to have another lawyer. That would be another, you know, $3,000 for me to come up with. And this is costly. It's, you know, going to court. This is why most people don't do it in this country. In the United States, most people, when they, even if they are innocent, like I am, they're forced to take the plea bargain because they cannot afford the time and the expense and the stress and the aggravation of going to court. And you know, on the other hand, the police, like I said, have gone to these various eyewitnesses and coached them into remembering something that didn't happen. So when I found that out, then I became quite discouraged, and I said, well, geez, can I fight this? Is it even possible to fight it? You know,
it sounds like a Soviet system being lined up here, or a Chinese system.
Yes. Yes.
Confess to your crime, comrade.
Yes.
Oh goodness. Well, you see, Chris, here's the point. You know, one of the reasons why we're doing the file is you do need financial help to fight this. I mean, $6,000 in lawyer fees just to come out of the chute. That's a lot of money. Yes. You know, we here at the French Connection, we live on a shoestring, and believe it or not, some donors have been very generous, and then we get very little from the rest of the rank and file, and that's okay, because basically it pays the internet bills and the three-way calling phone stuff and the rest of it. But there's not a lot left over. What there is left over, I've asked Eric to make sure you have access to for your legal defense. But we need a little help here, and this is one of the reasons why I'm bringing this back to the front here. I'd like to do another file before the end of the month, but we want people to start helping with this, because if we allow you to go to jail, I fear Eric's next. Erica, you have any feelings on this, Erica? Watching this, aren't you getting a little worried?
Well, my attitude is we should stop being like submissive little rabbits hiding. Everyone wants to say, well, we should fight it. Well, I agree we should fight it, but you look back at history, in 1915, 6,000 people or something went over to the courthouse, grabbed free Leo Frank, took him out, and just hung him on a tree. If we had some support, we'd go over to that courthouse, we'd just grab those lawyers and hang them. I mean, listen to this. Seriously,
Eric, these people are committing crimes. Eric, we can't be doing this.
I'm not saying we should do it, but think about this. These people are committing crimes. They're destroying evidence. They're starting wars. Why should we be little rabbits hiding in the bushes?
It's the fear. I saw a good article, I think, at Global Research today, that they have imposed, the American people are living under such fear.
But this is what I mean. This is the attitude people, I think, should change. I'm not saying go over there and do it. I'm just saying look at the attitude. The attitude is that we are frightened and, oh, can we help? Let's get a lawyer to help us. But I'm saying what we should do is say we're sick of this. Call the police. We got to start calling them up and saying we're tired of this. You're breaking the law, not Christopher. You're breaking the law, and you better quit it, because they are the ones that have the problem to deal with, not us. We should not be on the defensive. They should be on the defensive. They are the ones committing the crimes, and they know it.
Well, you know, in a perfect world, these people wouldn't even be in a position of power, but we don't live in that world.
Yeah.
What we do live in, instead, is a place where people are going to, impose themselves and their will on us, and they're doing that quite effectively to this, at least
but
till now.
But they're only...
Chris.
But you see, they're only doing it because we don't get the support. If we don't have the support from the people, of course they can get away with this.
That's right. Right.
You see, if the people would stop this fear, look at the military. I mean, where are they? They're coming back from Iraq, and where do they go? They just go back to their TV sets. And look at these people, these 9/11 victims. They're suffering health problems. Where do they go?
Mostly these vets are the same thing, Eric. Mostly these vets come back and they go to the VA hospital because, as you know, a very large number of them that come back are affected by radiation, depleted uranium, and, you know, just general stress
but,
and sickness.
Yeah, and I think people like Alex Jones are frightening people. They're going to get chips in their skin. They're going to get a police state. If people would realize we don't have to put up with this.
Well, Eric, yeah. That's a good point, is that a big part of the fake alternative media, what I call, is there to generate and to foster fear. Because when you put the population in fear, they're paralyzed, and they will not act. And that is the problem. That's what they did to us after 9/11. They talked about the you know, terrorism here and there, and they this huge culture of fear has been imposed on this country because it paralyzes people. It makes people willing to go along. And that's what people
right.
here tell me, you know, local people, I ask them, you know, what should I do? And the older people, they say, you know, well, you should just save your money and go with the flow. That's the way people think around here. Go with the flow. Take the blame or whatever and pay the penalty and that's it. But,
well,
and
that might be fine in a court case where you got caught speeding, but
yeah.
this is not what that is not why they're after you. They're not after you just for something trivial like this. They are trying to get rid of their opposition. And what the people have to start realizing is there's a lot of lists of people. You know, the American Free Press subscriber list.
Yeah.
The Idaho Observer subscriber list.
You know,
Alex Jones list. You know,
one thing, I know, Eric, you and I have talked about story ideas and that you want me to do, you know, you want me to help work on an article about the senior criminal network that runs the United States. But I have to tell you, when I was in court last time, The judge and the prosecutor were talking about what I've written on the internet and the URLs and this and that. And so it's like they very much intimidating me to, you know, they're saying we're looking at what you're writing, we're watching what you're writing. And
that's right.
We're going to use what you've written against you in court when I'm being charged with, resisting arrest and aggravated assault against a peace officer. My writings are being scrutinized by the prosecution.
That's,
I mean,
but you
how
see,
close to, you know, what they call the Soviet Union does it have to get?
That's right. They're looking at what you're writing and they don't like it and they're using the legal system to get rid of you. And if the American people put up with this, that's a sign we're helping a group of losers. If they allow this, then they could. That means that they can go after the rest of us. Start
right.
picking up everybody that they don't like, and the American people will just say, "Oh, well, go with the flow."
Well, I mean, you know, I'm facing, of course, with the election of Sarkozy here, and I'm facing a new kind of leader.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's pedigree goes way back to you know. He's not afraid of coming into an entire community and lighting it on fire and then beating the tar out of the people who come out of their homes to put the fire out.
No.
And if that's what he's willing to do to innocent victims, what would he do with his enemies? Not good. And I, you know, this is just the start. And I think they're worried about all this information that's been flooding out everywhere. And they're feeling like they've got to take some drastic action. And some of those drastic actions, I think, are going to be draconian when it comes to you, myself, Eric, and some other of us who have put our heads above the parapet and are taking fire here. We need the help of those supporters to start affecting, you know, the way that they go about their business. And I think money is a part of that because, especially if you're facing court situations and lawyers that aren't doing it pro bono, they're certainly interested in a paycheck from this, and then of course, and if they, you know, why shouldn't they in the real world? But at the same time, if you don't fight these people and you take a plea, that's capitulating to the crime, and I don't know.
Well, it depends on what the plea is.
They would get away, and they would feel that they'd won. And that's the really bad thing, because the police state in America is now real. You know, the police kill people on a daily basis that are innocent. Many of them are killed with this taser device, which they hit me with. But you know, you read the papers about how they barged into a woman's house, a 92-year-old woman's house in Atlanta, and when she resisted these people barging into her house, she shot one bullet through the door. They came in and shot her dead. This was one of those no-knock warrants. A no-knock warrant. They just barged into your house. What these three undercover guys did to my house, they just marched up the driveway. You see, this is why the police is trying very hard to mess up that part, and they're trying to say that I spoke to these officers while they were in their car on the street. No, these men marched right up the courtyard of my house and attacked me in my yard, on my property, when I was asking them who they were. And look what they did to Derek Hale in Wilmington, Delaware the other day. This was a vet from the Gulf War, from Iraq, two-term vet, and he's sitting on the porch, and they came, and they stopped their cars in front of him. They asked him to get his hands out of his pockets. He didn't move fast enough. They tasered him three times. Then they shot him with .40-caliber bullets in his chest.
Killed him.
Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is what we're fighting against. This police state.
But it's really
information. It's real. It's happening. It's now.
But it's not really a police state. It's a Zionist state. See, I think that you got to be careful, because otherwise, people think it's coming from the Americans. It's not coming from the Americans.
That's true, Eric. And you know, there are a lot of police out there who are maybe coming on, getting up to speed on the truth about all this stuff. And I got to be honest with you, I don't see them taking the side of Zionism if they find out the real story.
Yeah, and I think if we don't stop the trial before it happens, we got a problem, because if they can cheat this much, they can set up their own jury, and they can. If they can get away with the trial and set up the jury, then it doesn't matter what evidence you have.
Right.
I think we've got to stop this. We've got to make the phone calls before we even waste too much money. Start calling these people. Just bombard them and let them realize, if we can't get the support enough from the people to stop this trial, which doesn't make any sense anyway. I mean, the trial is nonsense. They should stop it. And if we can't get them to stop it, what does that tell us? That tells us we don't have much support at all. We can't even stop a crazy trial like this.
You have to look at 9/11. You know, this huge massacre of 3,000 people. Not a single case has gone to trial, or the American people.
The trials are worthless. That's right. The trials.
There hasn't been one for the plaintiff.
But that's right. That's what I'm saying. They can cheat in these trials. What difference does it make? We got to stop it beforehand. We've got to start letting people realize this has got to stop before the trial. If we can't stop it before the trial, what good does it do us?
Well, I mean, you can see this kind of impunity everywhere. I mean, I was mentioning to you before we went on air, I'm not a big Ron Paul supporter, because I think he's partially in with the crowd a bit. I mean, the fact that he even calls himself a Republican means I can't trust him. But the fact is, they're going to lock him out of South Carolina. And I mean, the guy's got support across the nation, and they're not going to let him show up to debate in South Carolina. They're not giving any explanation. They're just saying he's not invited.
Well,
they lock out Mike Gravel. They locked Gravel out of California, too, didn't they? I mean,
yes.
But see, you have to realize, from their point of view, you got to put yourself in their point of view. The technology is allowing them to be exposed by ordinary people. Teenage children can go on the internet now and analyze photos and videos and put documents up there to expose these people. They can't stop it. They can't stop everybody around the world from exposing them. They've got to they are at a point, I think, where they better do something quick or they're gonna lose it all. And I think they are realizing they've got to push it now. They've got to take that risk, push it a little harder, and because they don't have a choice any longer. The longer they wait, the more people that know what's going on, and the more people that join us. And so they've got to do something. They're going to be more bold now, and we've got to start realizing we've got to do it also. We've got to get stronger.
Because you're calling for people power. You're saying that the people have to get off their duffs and do.
Well, that's right. Because here's another thing you've got to think about seriously. This is a fight. We've already lost thousands in the war. Iraq has lost thousands. We've lost thousands in 9/11. You could call this a war. And in the military, when a bunch of soldiers run off and hide and leave the others stranded, what do? They kill them for abandoning the place. We should start realizing we are being left alone by our fellow citizens. These people are treason. You could call it traitors. You could call it deserters. You could call it treasonous. We need their help. And people have to start realizing this. This is a war. And if they're just going to sit in front of their television set, we ought to start considering a few of these people as traitors.
But, you know, they have really turned up the demonization of us three pretty hard on the Internet. I mean, the AFP people have worked overtime. I'm sure Muff Kakar over there is writing lots of articles against you, me, and Eric. I mean, we're being slimed, and all of it is never about our research or about the things that we have discovered, but rather my wife is black, and or I'm hiding in France. I have no right to be considered a real patriot. Or I mean, the stuff is really nonsensical, but it's really in a torrent right now against us.
Articles
coming everywhere about you, myself, and Eric, and it's really unbelievable. But none of it has any substance. It's nonsense. Wake up from your slumber. Just went through a real debate on the work that the three of us have done, and you should have seen the opposition against us. Boy, they were just mudslinging, name calling idiots. And the people over Wake Up From Your Slumber crush them for us. And this is the kind of thing that can happen when good people know the facts and are willing to sit through the nonsense and fight. And at the final thread of this thing, we were looking like we've done an honest job of looking at the facts, and the people who came out against us, I think, have even been kicked off the forum or they're running for cover.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
That's the thing. Excuse me. One second. I just want to say that, you know, I got into this. I've been a journalist for 6 years, and I wrote. I don't write opinion pieces. I write from evidence, and I write reports. And you know, I even saw that Jim Hoffman. He had attacked me. I'm the one who wrote about these molten pools of steel metal that was found in the basements of the World Trade Centers. I got that because I asked the men who did the removal of the debris. I asked Peter Tully and Mark Loiseau, and they told me that they had found this. And I did that back in 2002, and that's one thing that stimulated Professor Jones. He read about that, and he raised questions and looked at the thermite. But I just saw, you know, when I was looking at it yesterday, I saw that this Jim Hoffman, who is working with Professor Jones, that he wrote a piece on his website, I think it's called 9/11 Research, in which he spends the first part of the article saying that you can't believe what I've written here about the molten metal because I use it to speculate that maybe explosives were used in the World Trade Center, and you know, I'm the one who brought this to Professor Jones' attention, and yet he's attacking the whole idea that molten metal was there. Yet he's working with a man who's, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, you know, see, and Eric's brought this up before, you know, Jimmy Walters was not a micromanager of the people he put around him. And Eric, every time he would visit with Jimmy to go on a speaking tour or whatever, he discovered that there was, you know, Grebby was there, and I mean, there was a team of disinfo, New York City Zionist Jews involved in the management of his operations, and Eric told him, look, you've got a mess on your hands here. You're not.
Yeah.
And every one of these events that he spent tens of thousands of dollars to set up turned into a pile of dung because he was surrounded by complete disinfo.
Right. I remember that. You know, sometimes in Spain or in our European tour, we had fewer people than I attract in a library event. You know, in some cases we only had 10, 20 people at events where he had spent tens of thousands of dollars to promote the event. You know, and I expected there to be a lot of people in Madrid, Spain, but, you know, they had their own bombing, and our event was practically empty.
Yep.
And I mean, this is the thing, is that, you know, he had people that were sabotaging his event.
Well, yep. At the time, he believed that Israel was America's best friend. And like most Americans, he grew up with this stuff, and he was trusting people. He didn't think anything strange that these people that want to help him are supporters of Israel. It never occurred to him that they were involved in the 9/11 attack. And that, see, this is where the sabotage can come from. And people like Jim Hoffman, they're out there to sabotage people. Look at that meeting you had, Christopher, in October of 2004, I think it was.
Yeah, in Los Angeles.
I mean, tell people this. See, people don't realize what happened. If you go over it, maybe they if you explain what that was.
Yeah. Sure. It was the Los Angeles event in which it was a people's grand jury, I think it was, by and in this, I was supposed to speak after him, but he wasn't able to get his computer program working, his PowerPoint thing working, so I went and spoke first. And he was supposed to speak about the collapse of the Twin Towers, and I was supposed to speak about the Pentagon. So I spoke about the lack of evidence at the Pentagon and what the evidence did show, and that it's pretty clear that a 757 or 767 aircraft did not crash into the Pentagon. and the evidence that showed that something else did and whatnot. And we only had 10 minutes to speak. And then he came up and was to speak about the collapse of the World Trade Center, which is, of course, the, you know, the biggest event of the day. 3,000 people died there or something like that. And he only spoke for about 2 minutes about the actual collapse of the World Trade Center towers. And everything that he said, you know, had been written in Eric Hirschman's book 2 years before, and he had no new information. But then he spent the next 8 minutes basically criticizing what I had said about the Pentagon and saying that, you know, my discussion of the Pentagon discredited the movement, you know, and this is what they often say things like this, and that it was I was taking away from the movement because I was raising questions about what happened in the Pentagon. And so I realized that this guy is like a wolf in sheep's clothing. He was there to protect the official version of what happened to the Pentagon.
Well, this is the same thing that Mike Rivero has done repeatedly, and Eric and I have called the listeners to this fact.
Well, Alex Jones did the same thing. He was calling it a honeypot, the Pentagon. That's what his term, honeypot.
Yeah.
See, they're all doing this. They all say one thing. They'll let a little bit of information out, but then they have these other things that are nonsense. And some people do the reverse. They'll talk a little bit about the Pentagon, but then they try to minimize the World Trade Center or Flight 93. They're all lying, and people don't get it.
Yeah, and then of course, because we call them like we see them, to the rank and file out there who go to work all day and only maybe spend an hour and a half, 2 hours a day trying to wade through this crap, we end up looking like the guys that are trying to, you know, spin this in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
But what people really need to do is spend quality time looking at the discrepancies between the stories of these people and what we actually know about these events. And once you do that, you start getting a pattern. See, it's not the individual what they say. It's who they link to and how they spin a story in a linked-up sense. What Alex Jones says and how he goes in line with what Coast to Coast is writing and how it's in line with Rivero's work and what Rentz is saying. And you take a look at the network, and then you get a larger picture of the deception. Because taken individually, you may not be able to see the deception clearly. You might say, ah, it's a mistake, or maybe he hasn't researched it. You can always make an excuse. But once you see who they work with and how they're pushing you into a pen of belief, then you start saying to yourself, wait a minute, man, this is not a mistake. You know, the Michael Corbins of the world and the, you know, and then you can go to the other side of the real freaked out world of the white supremacists and the Hal Turners of the world, and you can see a different kind of penning up of people. But it's clear when you take a look at the larger picture that there are pens being built for the belief systems they want people to adhere to.
Yeah, but Hal Turner is interesting because on his website the other day, it might still be there, he's asking people to be members of his website, and he wants them to get a notary public to certify that their name and address is correct. Now think about this one. Think about this seriously. He wants you. He's got a form there. You print it out, take it to your notary public, and then he gives you special access to his website. He wants to know your name and address and make sure it's correct. For what? See, this is what these people could be doing, getting the names and addresses of people who are opposing what's going on, people who might be active, and then if they get away with what they're doing with Christopher Bolin, they can just start picking off the others one by one.
And you know, in these movements, you know, various newspapers, like the one I used to work for and things, the list is the most important thing that they have, the list of their subscribers, the list of their supporters. And that is the most coveted and protected thing. But one thing I want to say about Professor Jones is that I like Professor Jones. His research seems very solid to me. It sounds good. But he has been attacked a great deal by people like Judy Wood and Morgan Reynolds and this Jim Fetzer, these other so-called academics. And Eric and I warned him when I went out there to Provo last March. I warned Professor Jones several times. I said, do you know who these 9/11 scholars people are? I said, you should be very, very careful about them. And
yep.
With people like Jim Fetzer. And he listened to me, but then he stayed with them. And then, I mean, 6 months later or so, you know, this Jim Fetzer was stabbing him in the back. Now, the thing is, what I want to emphasize here is that because Professor Jones has credibility and he has a pretty good thesis about the molten metal and the thermite and the World Trade Center, people who do not have that credibility are attaching themselves to him. People like Jim Hoffman. Because they want to attach to him because by being attached to him, they bring credibility to themselves, and then they are allowed to act and to speak and to you know, criticize me, Eric, Pentagon Attack, what have you. So it's not – Professor Jones, I think, is just a little bit naive about the disinformation that goes on in the movement.
He can't be, because I gave him the same discussion twice on private phone calls with him. He got upset that I said that Fetzer could have been involved in the offing of that kid up at that university, and of course he sent me a nasty email, and then we got on the phone together and twice once after that, and I told him the story completely, Christopher. This is before you and I were working regularly together, and I told him the story. It was and he agreed with me throughout the whole discussion, and then he did nothing about it, which. What is that about?
Well, unless he's totally fearful. But see, this is what I mean. And see, anyone who contacts him now, Jim Hoffman, may get his name and address. They may be monitoring everybody who contacts him now.
It's possible.
And see, these lists of names, and people that think American Free Press is honest, I was using it, I use it, the paper now, for a packing material, and I just noticed in 2003, May, I just saw this article, Mysterious Crop Formations. They're talking about crop circles, and it says, for additional information, this is the bottom of the article, for additional information is at the news website, rents.com. I mean, all you have to do is look at this newspaper, look at all of them. They've all got little bits of deception mixed in there. They promote Rents, Jones, it's the same groups of people over and over and over. These are not accidents.
These people,
these are all little pens where they get the people, they get the names and addresses, and everybody who's been a subscriber to this ought to start thinking seriously that they may be next. If they get away with Bolin, everybody else, the Idaho Observer, the Global Outlook of Canada, all of the people that have been subscribing to these things, where are their names? Who's got them, and what are they planning to do with them?
Well, I mean, and take a look at the relationship that was really, for a very long time, clandestine. This Muff Kaka over there and Piper, he was publishing his books together. They were working together on the QT, and of course we've made it more known. But Wing TV was kind of the guy that would be your friend and then stick you in the back and then go to the next guy, and he seemed like they were just. But the whole time he's got a running relationship with American Free Press, and I would dare say it's much of the writing going on over there right now on the internet that's coming out of that Piper group is Muff Kaka and the rest of them.
Well, what's interesting is that immediately after I was arrested and this police assault happened on my yard, Makufka and Giuliani, Lisa Giuliani and this Victor Thorne fella, they did a radio show in which they interviewed the police and talked to the police. And they attacked me without even talking to me.
That's right.
And then they got me on this Michael Piper show, and they he really ganged up on me. This Makufka fella asked me to do something to denounce the lies of Eric Hubschmid, and I said what? You know, I hadn't read every article on Eric Hubschmid's website, but this is the thing: is that they gang up on you like this, and they clearly clearly Makufka was working with Michael Piper in this concerted attack on me.
Well, they were also publishing Kaminsky's book. And look, take a look at that 9/11 video that was played in Britain several times. You'll find Kaminsky's in there, Mike Piper's in there, Wayne Madsen's. They're interviewing all sorts of people, but every one of them is a liar.
Yeah.
That's all they're doing. And see, Europe has to start realizing this too. They might look at America and think, oh, it's America's problem. 9/11 is their problem. They're getting it too. They're getting the same thing. They've already been through world wars. They're getting laws passed. They're getting their governments taken over. They better start taking this seriously also.
Well, yeah. Eric, you know, they had the London bombing, 5 weeks after we were there? They had that London bombing in Tavistock and everything. And that is such a pack of lies. Just like the Madrid bombing, but I mean the London bombing is clearly a pack of lies that's been foisted on the British people.
And interesting, you know, the people that were running the show that day were ex-CIA and operatives. The guy that ran the underground over there was a retired CIA agent.
Well, some of that might be to put the blame on America so that no one realizes who's the CIA, who in the CIA did it, and what's the connection with Israel?
Well, I mean, come on, Netanyahu's standing there in the same building where the bus blew up, and I mean, you know, there was Giuliani was standing there in the same city at the same time. I mean,
well, it's the same group.
Blew up in front of ICTS, the International Consultants on Targeted Security.
That's right.
You know, these Israeli company that did the passenger screening at Boston's Logan Airport on 9/11. They had an office in London in Tavistock, and the bus blew up directly in front of their office.
And there was a Star Demolitions Company truck sitting in front of the bus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is minutes after, when they're still pulling bodies off. They got this demolitions company truck sitting there. It was probably him that, you know, they used this truck. It stinks so bad. And the fact is, I made a mistake once saying, well, I think most people in Britain think it's a lie. And somebody from Britain wrote me an email quite quickly and said, wait a minute. No, most people in Britain don't know it's a lie. And in fact, that was not an accurate statement, Daryl. You're being wishful thinking over here. And I said, well, geez, how could they not know? But
well,
they don't.
It's the same thing about 9/11. You know, we've been talking about 9/11 and the false flag terror and the fakeness of 9/11, the official story, for 5 years, 5.5 years now. But we are still very much avant-garde of the average American reader or person. You know, I will talk about some of these basic facts with some local people, and they'll look at me and they'll say, wow, if that's true, what are you saying? You know, they haven't even thought these things yet.
And
that's why we're in a vulnerable position. I'm in a vulnerable position. Like, you know, we have some very devoted followers. I have some very generous people who have helped me in this predicament that I'm in. But we are still avant-garde. We are a very small group. Maybe in time more people will come around to seeing it. You know, they'll listen to Rosie O'Donnell and the word will spread. But, you know, people have to see Eric Hirschman's book. They have to see the facts, and they have to understand this themselves, not simply listen to Rosie O'Donnell.
Well, I mean, you know, Rosie, why is it that the nest of vipers is around her like a new suit? I mean, the Alex Joneses, and I mean, he's got her home phone number and stuff. Alex does, you know. See, now when Charlie Sheen came out, we knew that they were going to use him as a discrediting vehicle. However, it still did make some people at least look at the information, so that there was a benefit to that. And it's the same thing with this Rosie O'Donnell thing. Whether or not she's just trying to be discredited as an overweight nut job lesbian New York City liberal nut case, which is the possibility, you know, maybe other people are saying, hey, wait a minute, why is this leaking out everywhere? From, you know, I mean, you can't help but remember that Charlie Sheen has said something. You can't help but remember there have been questions.
Yeah, but see, it serves them a useful purpose, because you can see it if you look at the ordinary people. To the people that know about 9/11, Charlie Sheen is a hero. To the people that think he's a jerk and don't want to believe in 9/11, they think, oh, it's just a bunch of these crazy sexual perverts. And Rosie O'Donnell fits the same pattern. To the people that know about 9/11, she's a hero. To everyone else, she's just some perverted, goofball, fat woman. Don't you see? It pacifies both sides of the group. It brings attention to Alex Jones, and it makes people feel that they have a hero, and to the other people, they laugh at it. And insult her. And so from their point of view, this is what they want. They don't want to bring somebody credible out there. They bring out the weirdos that people will laugh at and call sexual deviants and gambling problem people. Don't you see how it works? If they were to bring somebody credible out, they'd have a real problem on their hands.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I think this is a mud barrier against a tidal wave. And I mean, what is it really doing except stopping people from maybe, looking into it for a week or two? I mean, the fact is, the flow of history is going only in one direction.
Well, yeah, that's why I think they're panicking. But I'm saying they use Rosie O'Donnell and Charlie Sheen to pacify a lot of the 9/11 people and bring them over to Alex Jones. And they're doing now, Loose Change is going on, an airline movie what is it?
Branson, yeah.
For his airline, Virgin Atlantic or something.
Yeah.
They're going to put it on. What they're doing is they realize it's over. They've got to start moving quick. The game is getting close to the end. And what they're trying to do is they are trying to get their people promoted as 9/11 investigators, so that when it does get really out there, they have people like Burmis and Hoffman, Jim Hoffman, those are going to be the people who will be in control. And if they can get rid of Bolin and the rest of us, they will have total control when this opens up.
That's right. It'll be a Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld conspiracy.
That's right. They'll blame a few people, and then the network will be have total control of America, Canada, Australia, Britain and France, Germany. They'll have even more control if the people don't wise up, if they don't stop being so frightened, stop worrying about getting chipped. They've got to start realizing we can stop this.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
you know, it's interesting. It's interesting that, you know, for solace, I read Plato. I read the dialogues of Plato and what Socrates, Crito and Phaedo, what he said or what he talked about before he died when he was facing a trial like this. And there's a very interesting line when he talks about that they try to scare the people like children with hobgoblin terror. And I thought that it's so amazing, you know, they scare the people with fears of imprisonment and death, and they were doing this, you know, this is 400 years BC or so, in Athens, and,
yeah.
And the people faced the same thing then as we face today, you know, people are being scared.
The last file I did was about how they move into a nation and rape it and steal its value and then go off to another one. The formula has not changed in millennia. I mean, if you take a look back in history, you know, they did it to the Turks. They've done it to Germany. They've done it to Britain. They've done it now to America. They're probably all packing their bags and heading to China and getting their eyes changed or whatever to blend in over there. And the simple fact is it's just one raped nation after another over history.
Well, the technique works. Why would they give up a successful technique?
Even when they get caught, they get away with it. We in America, in the United States, and in the West, we are the rape victims now.
That's right.
And that's what we have to understand. That's what people have to understand. And they have to fight it. They have to resist it. If we don't resist it, it's going to get worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the whole question I'm in. You know, do I fight it? Do I try to raise the money and put myself through this and go through this very, very rigged court, you know, where I'm facing manufactured evidence and deleted evidence and withheld evidence.
Well, it's
and
obviously,
like, it's like I'm going to court with my hands tied behind my back. Or do I just simply say, look it, I can see I'm up against a very tough foe who's doing more to protect themselves and their wrongdoing than I can afford to fight. And do I just take the plea bargain and say, you know, strategic withdrawal? Do I do a strategic retreat and say, I'm sorry, you know, I'll pay the fine, I'll take the blame, and then do I take myself and go to Europe someplace, go someplace where you know, I don't feel that I'm going to be tasered and where I can write? You see, I can't, it's very, very hard for me to write when I know that the state and the prosecutor and the judge are reading what I'm writing every day.
Yeah, but you don't have to worry about them reading it. That's what's scaring them so much. What's the reason you're there.
That's right.
But what you have to realize is we should stop this before it goes to trial. If we can't, we're in trouble. We got to tell these people to start taking this seriously.
Let's talk a little bit about the numbers that we placed up on the website. It's front and center, ladies and gentlemen, middle of the French Connections, IamTheWitness.com website. You'll see a picture of Christopher there. Press on that, open it up, and you will get a list of contact information for not only the press, but for the community where Christopher lives, the courthouse where he is being criminally harassed, and the whole story is sitting there.
Prosecution. It's malicious prosecution is what it is.
That's right, it is.
They're maliciously prosecuting me. And the thing is that, you know, it's good for them to call those people and to raise their voices, but the simple fact also remains that if I don't raise a few thousand dollars more, I will not be able to fight this in court. I got a letter from my lawyer yesterday that he wants me to pay him to go to trial and to pay his partner. And it's like $6,000. And the thing is I ask myself, I've always asked myself, how much is the truth worth? How much is one life at the World Trade Center worth? How much is one soldier's life in Iraq worth? You know, this is a small amount of money that I have to raise to fight a battle that's much bigger than I am. Much bigger than I am. And you guys know very well that, you know, after this attack on me, American Free Press raised a lot of money for my legal defense fund, and they did not give it to me. and then they fired me. So, you know, they've done everything to cut the columns of Christopher Bolin, so to weaken me.
Yeah, and now they're writing overtime clandestinely as people across the internet in forums and stuff against you, myself, yeah. and Eric, trying to marginalize us from the mainstream. Of course, in some ways that helps us. In other ways, of course, we are marginalized. But the simple fact of the matter is there is a grand effort out there to push people away from the work we've done.
What are they saying about the evidence that I presented last spring that the temperatures that were cooking under the World Trade Center pile were at least 4,500 degrees? This blue smoke that emanated from the rubble pile for 3 months was nano-sized particles and corroborated what Professor Jones said, at least that there was some thermite and very, very high temperature aluminal thermic reactions going on. And I asked Professor Cahill out in California, who had measured the smoke and found that the majority of the particles were in the nano-sized range. And I asked him, Professor Cahill, what would produce such small particles in the smoke? And he said, only temperatures at or above the boiling point of the metals involved. So that means that the fires underneath the World Trade Center were cooking above the boiling point of iron.
Yeah, it's a foundry.
Do they talk about that, or do they talk about the fact that both airplanes flew into computer data center rooms? You know, no, they don't talk about that. They criticize you for your wife. They criticize me for my wife. They criticize Eric because he doesn't have a wife. I mean, you know,
that's
the nonsense.
Truth. But you see, yeah, but this is the sign. This is a sign that we're winning in a way. People should not get depressed about this. You've got to realize the battle is on and it's heating up. This is why they want to get rid of you, and we've got to stop the trial beforehand. People have got to try it first. Call and just bombard them if we have to. If we can. Just get the support, we can make this trial end.
But see, here's the other thing, too. The fact that many of our listeners, and I'll go with this statistic, you won't, ladies and gentlemen, you won't find this on Alexa because five of the largest countries that listen to us are not even listed on our Alexa. But we get 40% of our listenership from the European population. And I got to say, you know, for a couple of dollar phone call to the United States, a foreign accent and a foreign voice and a foreign person calling these people and declaring that you're from another country, it is a very intimidating thing that this misdemeanor case, being arrested for resisting arrest, which is in itself nonsense.
Yeah.
This kind of people calling up from another country lends a great deal of gravitas to you, Christopher, because it lets them know that this is not just a local issue, not even a national issue, but an international one. And it becomes a different kind of game when they know that. And I remember you saying after the fact that when we had calls coming in from all over the world, when you were still in the prisons, in the jail cell that night, there was a very bizarre look on some of their faces saying, holy smokes, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Well, it's actually cheaper to call. You can call through Skype now, and then the calling cards in Europe, you can get it for sometimes a penny or so.
It's a couple of bucks. People can throw a couple
of
bucks.
It's not even that much.
A cup of coffee.
But, I mean, it's not even that much.
Yeah.
And that way, you can easily, with a calling card, you can do it over and over.
And email.
Yeah, and so it's cheap. It's actually cheap, and so we've got to try to stop this before it goes any further. We got to let them realize we're not putting up with it anymore. We're not little rabbits hiding in the bushes any longer. We've had enough of this.
Yes.
And
I really appreciate your encouragement, Eric, because you know it's true. Until the people, Americans have been sitting on their duffs for so long. This is why we have the nation of wolves. I read this someplace: a nation of sheep begets a government of wolves.
Well, we also have the wrong attitude in this country. A lot of people in the military and the others, they think that they're tough and courageous because they can get into a fist fight. That mm-hmm. is not toughness. That's violence. If you're tough. You'll face the problems of 9/11. You'll face Zionism. And toughness is not beating somebody up, especially if they're smaller than you.
Exactly.
And going into a bar and beating some little kid up, that's not toughness. And it's not toughness when you have a gun and they don't. the people have to realize you're tough when you deal with reality, when you deal with the problems and you talk about them. And that's all people have to do. They're always saying, what can we do? You can talk about it. Just tell people to look at what's going on. You don't even have to agree with us. Just talk. Spread the information.
And people, you know, your readers, your listeners are probably more active than most, but people, the Americans tend to think that somebody else will take care of it because we're all so specialized now. That's somebody else's job. Somebody else will do that.
That's the wrong attitude, Chris. You're exactly right.
Yeah, that's
you know,
why you're there.
I'm surprised that it takes, and this is no dispersion to the people that do follow the French Connection, but I really have to yell at the top of my lungs sometime to get some movement in some of these things, or even donations to help us pay for our phone bills. Mm-hmm. And I wonder sometimes if a lot of people are sitting on their hands listening to the files and saying, I won't send them the $5 that they need. I won't make the phone call. Well, we need you.
I want to say that you apparently have quite a few Jewish listeners, and quite a few of them have donated to me as well.
Yes.
So people have to understand that I'm not anti-Semitic, never have been. I've lived in Israel. I understand it pretty well, which is one reason why I'm so critical. But you know, many of my supporters might write thank you for your righteous research, because the Israelis and the Jewish people realize they have been conned in the same way that we're being conned.
You know, this is another thing that's interesting that all the Jews should be thinking about. If they had a good understanding of who Meyer Lansky is, Larry Silverstein, the Brockmans, do you know that there's probably a very good chance a lot of them would be looking at these people and think, this is what I've been supporting all this time?
Right.
These losers, these criminals, these psychos, and if they had an idea, but see, they don't know and they're not looking.
And they use the good name of the Jewish victims of the Second World War as extortion to extort money out of Switzerland and Germany, and then they kept it. And they did not give it to the victims or the victims' relatives.
That's right. You see, it's a group of criminals.
That's right. It is criminals. Now, but see, here's the thing. I get a lot of stuff about, well, you called for the carpet bombing of Israel. Well, I did say that. I did say it on a broadcast because this was during a period where they were invading and destroying Lebanon. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, what, you know, and what if they lose 17 soldiers or something, or 80 soldiers, I don't know. They killed tens of thousands, they destroyed the homes and lives of 100 or more, or even a million people in southern Lebanon. And I did say, you know, how would it be if they were carpet bombed or cratered? Come on. Now, at the same time, the Jewish people that are righteous about the truth, they're the people who have been lied to the most, and I got to tell you, I am not a religious person, and I don't draw lines along religious dogma. I am, on the other hand, interested in having them come to the truth, because I think that the beginning of the end for their whole conspiracy is if the Jews themselves turn on these crooks. And the fact is, if they lose the support that is closest to them, they're toast. And we do need the Jews, and I got to tell you something. That Jewish community, as small as it is really going to tip the balance in our favor. And we do need more Jews following these facts and looking into these things. And I am always a welcoming to people who are from that community that are interested in the truth. And here's the thing. I got an email from a guy named Birdman Bryant. And he's written some very powerful things, but much of it is rather hateful toward the Jews or blacks or Latinos or whatever. Now, I don't know if even for a second whether he works for the bad guys, and I will not even presume to know. However, I do know that kind of vitriol is not helping. And I don't. I have vitriol against Zionists and Sabbatinskyists and Sabbateans and the Rothschild crime families, but I don't toward Jewish people, Muslim people, Catholic people. It doesn't matter. We have to see, because if we're going to win over hearts and minds here, we've got to be honest about who's doing it and why, and what we need from the public who are listening. And there are Israeli families that listen, and there are people in Holland that are Jewish and that are listening. There are people in New York that listen to us that are Jewish. We need all of you. We need every one of you. There are good Jews across the world fighting this. They just don't get the press of the Zionists. That's it.
And look at what they're doing today. They're having a protest in Israel about Ehud Olmert and his problems and his lack of popularity for waging this nonsense war that he waged against Hezbollah last summer,
yep.
Which was very, very damaging to Israel because a lot of Israelis were injured very badly, and it was a disaster for both sides.
Yep.
But today they're having big protests, and they say that if these protests are large enough in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and Haifa, what have you, then he will be forced to resign. Well, why aren't we getting these kinds of protests in this country? 80%, 90% of the people in this country, in the United States, do not want American troops to be in Iraq any longer. Yet our president, who's acting like a complete tyrant, is going against the will of the American people and saying that this commitment of American troops in Iraq has to be open-ended.
Well, because he fears his handlers more than he fears the public.
Exactly.
Well, the public doesn't do anything in this country. They just sit in front of TV sets.
That's right.
Exactly.
And see, maybe what we're going to have to do is put some fear into them, too. They're afraid of the Zionists. Well, maybe we should start saying when we get this over with, we're going to consider a lot of them to be deserters and traitors. Put some fear into these people.
It's always been the average person will not raise a finger to stop, you know, the problems that he sees in front of him.
Well, look at Russia. Look at Russia when they're taking people one by one to Siberia. Nobody ever said.
Even worse, an example was the East German Stasi, and I got to tell you something that society was kept under lock and key by the most sophisticated clandestine small group that you could imagine, and in fact, I don't think that the controls have been lifted from Germany to this day. They've morphed themselves into other forms, but Germany is certainly still under the highest level of surveillance of any country on earth.
Well, yeah, they're still under control of America. America still has bases, and then who is America following orders from? It's Israel. And Germany's being made to create submarines for them and other weapon systems.
Yeah,
this is ridiculous, and we don't have to put up with this nonsense. But look at, like you said, the Stasi was getting the citizens to work for them, and that's
right.
What we have now. We have now Boleyn's neighbors are now helping this group get rid of Boleyn. This is his neighbors. They should be considered treasonous. Don't you realize this? When your own neighbors join these people, their neighbors outnumber the police and the.
But the thing
lawyers.
Is, Eric, is that the people in the United States, they will not question the authority. When a car pulls up their driveway and there's two detectives wearing guns come to their house and have a talk with these people, you know, people are afraid.
But that's what I mean. It's fear. It's fear. And yet people really don't realize we outnumber them. We're the ones paying their bills. We're the ones giving them electricity, not them. They're not the ones growing the food, producing the houses.
Of course we do. And Eric, 99.9% of the American population really wants to know who committed the acts of terror on 9/11. But we're up against a very, very well-entrenched and powerful...
Yeah, and think about this, though.
One-tenth of 1%.
All we need is the Teamsters Union on our side, and that would be the end of it.
Right.
Without the team, just one group, one large group, the Teamsters, the carpenters, electricians, all you have to do is go over there, shut their power off, say, we're no longer giving you anything. No food, no supplies, that's it. Go home, get out of here. What are the police going to do when there's no electricity? Do you think they're going to go over and turn it on? They're not going to know how. What are the lawyers going to do when no one's delivering food to their neighborhood? We can deal with this if the people would stop acting like rabbits.
Right. You're right.
Little rabbit Fufu running through the forest. Do you remember that as a kid?
Yeah.
And they knocked the rabbit over the head, and yeah.
All we have to do. The rabbit
just goes there. He goes to the slaughter like a sheep. It's unbelievable.
Because look at 6,000 people lynched Leo Frank. 6,000 people at the courthouse. You shut the power off. You just grab those lawyers. You say, get this court over with. That's it. If they don't, you hang them. I mean, we couldn't do it.
Yeah,
but Eric, you know, that's a radical solution that I can't endorse on this.
I know we're not endorsing it, but I'm saying to people, these people are committing crimes, and what is our reaction? To hide. They are the ones doing the crimes, not us. People have to realize that they are in the wrong, not us. And we should stop being on the defensive. They should be defending themselves. We should be telling them, stop it.
Yeah. You know, that should have, that kind of reaction should have occurred when George Bush and Dick Cheney said that there would not be a blue ribbon investigation, independent investigation of 911 in November of 2001, because that would take away from their colonial war in Afghanistan.
Oh, you know what's funny? Listen, just a little while ago, Blair said they didn't want to investigate 7/7 because it would take away from the war on terror. The exact same thing they said about 9/11. It's the same playbook.
Yeah. They're not that sophisticated, and be honest with you, I have discovered, aside from you know, thug squads that they've got around the globe, they're not very large in number either.
But they're groups of criminals. This is what people have to realize. They're criminals. They're not that intelligent. They are using fear to keep people under control and propaganda, lies. We can deal with them. Look at, we're a small group, and look at how much trouble we're giving them. We can deal with these people. We just have to stop this attitude of fear, stop this police state fear. We can deal with it as long as we realize that we can. They don't want you to realize, that you can do something. They want you to make you feel like, oh, you can't because you're just an ordinary person. People can do it.
Yeah. And these ordinary people have helped me a great deal, Eric. And I want to thank all those people, your listeners. And
we have the best supporters in the world.
Yes. And it's true. Many of them are from Europe and Australia and point south and north.
Yeah.
But I want to thank them for their support and all that they've done for me. And, you know, I'm going to wait a couple of days and I have to make my decision though. But, you know, whether I can go ahead and fight this, whether that's the thing to do, most of my supporters want me to fight that, but, you know, they can write to me. I would appreciate if people could write to me by email or write to Eric and tell me, do they think that this is something I should fight? Or should I go with the flow, as the people say here, and take my knocks, cut my losses, and get out of Dodge? I mean, you know, I've done the best I could to try to bring the truth out about 911, and if it's come down to the fact that I cannot, that I do not have the support to fight this, then I won't fight it. I mean, I have a family. I would like to live longer. I don't want to put my family through this for year after year after year. But on the other hand, if I fight it, there's a very good chance that I could have a civil suit, and in the civil suit we would win, and we could make a real dent in this kind of thing, because they would have to pay $1 million or something for what they did when they broke my arm and tasered me. I mean, that is wrong. And they're tasering people in this country every day. I'm fortunate that I didn't get killed that day.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so if we can't fight it, that's a sign we have no support from the public. And if we don't have any support from the public, then we may as well just forget it and go off.
Let's give out the detailed information, Christopher, so people can write you and where they can send donations to and how they can help financially and support emotionally. And, Eric, after that, I'd like you maybe to chime in on some of the information about what we've put up on the website, how they can get that. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, the easiest way is they can go to the website that you two work is iamthewitness.com.
Yep.
And there's a page there on the left where it says Chris Bolin. They can read my articles at the top of the page, and they can donate in that way. Or they can go to my website, which is now up. My wife is doing a very good job. It's called bolin.com. That's bolin.com.
We'll put a link to that on our page as well.
Yeah, in that way, and they can write to me through those mailboxes that are there.
Well, and of course, right now we've got this story on the front center of the website. So
I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, nobody can survive this alone, and that's the whole thing.
Exactly.
So, Eric, you have anything to add about the contacts and what we've put up there? Somebody wrote me and said that some of the contacts are not working. They got their email bounced back to them.
Oh, we have to check that. I know. The other problem is they might just change emails after a while. So what people have to do is check back every day. We'll try to make sure they work. And because every day you can send a message. It doesn't cost anything.
Yeah,
so
if you get a bounce back, ladies and gentlemen, inform me, and I'll forward it to Eric, who works as the webmaster on the site, and we'll make sure that we get an update on where you can send information and which links are working.
Good. Very good. We'll do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, this program that we've just put together is really about you. As much as we're the guys doing a lot of the squawking here, it's really on behalf of people who like yourselves who really want our change here, who really believe that this is the beginning of the end of a tyrannical system that has taken a thousand years to perfect on their part, and we're dismantling it one brick at a time, but we can't do it without your support, and we do appreciate your support, and I don't want you to think at all that that we were, you know, criticizing your participation here, because I know that the French Connection and IamTheWitness.com has the best supporters on earth, bar none. There are people who have been able to wade through the lies, and they know the truth. And, you know, without you guys, we couldn't fight this fight at all. So continue with your support. We really need it. Christopher and Eric, thanks so much for doing this file today. We're in debt to both of you for doing your work.
Thank you, and thank you to all your listeners and the supporters. Thank you very much.
And Eric, thanks again for coming on today, man. It's as usual, we're trying to stir the pot here, and you've done that again, so thanks, huh?
All right, we'll talk to you later.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank each and every one of you again, and until the next time, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling you all to be well. Bye-bye now.